cases. Okay, turn to 2 Kings chapter 2. 2 Kings chapter 2. Caleb is going to read our main verse, 2 Kings 2, 23 through 25.
He went up from there to Bethel.
Wait, hold on, wait. I paused for a minute. I tell you what, I have disciples around here are eager. That's right, zealous. But we'll get zealous in a minute here. Tony is going to read Proverbs 24:6, and Zach is going to read 2 Kings 2:25, and then we'll refer back to these verses. We started a series. We're going to be working right through, and this probably will take a long time. I'm doing several in a row, and then we'll occasionally come back to it, but we're looking at the life of Elisha, and our interest is we are looking at the life of Elisha purely. We're looking for leadership lessons, because most of his ministry was always involved with other people. Just by contrast, Elijah had numbers of solo experiences, him alone with God, whereas Elisha is always in connection with other people. And so we're going to pull lessons because we see different aspects of leadership. So this one is a very strange story, one of the interesting stories in the Bible. It's kind of interesting. Commentators or preachers, they kind of will, if you ever look through, they will skip over this because it's such an odd story. It's Elisha. Partly I was drawn to this story because it sounds like some young kids are hassling Elisha because he's going bald, and so he calls bears out and has the bears eat them up. So I was like, I like that story. I don't know why, but there's just something about that that has really drawn me to that story. So we need to understand, because this actually is a profound leadership principle here, and that is the ability to confront opposition. So that's what we're going to look here. The title of today's lesson is The Need for Bears. In 2 Kings 2, we're just going to read just a few verses for the sake of time. You read the whole story in your own time. Go ahead. Now, Caleb.
He went up from there to Bethel, and while he was going up on the way, some small boys came out of the city and jeered at him, saying, "Go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head." And he turned around, and when he saw them, he cursed them in the name of the Lord. And two she-bears came out of the woods and tore up 42 of the boys. From there he went on to Mount Carmel, and from there he returned to Samaria.
Wow.
So
his
translation says, "Young boys, do you need me to come back tonight during children's church? The unruly children I need to deal with." Out of curiosity, what translation is that?
That was ESV.
Okay, ESV. All right. So, all right, let's look for a moment. We're going to talk about perspective. And so the reality of ministry is seen in this story, and that is ministry involves opposition. Anytime you do something for God, somebody is going to oppose it. Elisha is stepping into God's will. If you get the timeline here, you know that he has just taken the mantle. He is now stepping into the will of God. And so far, the only thing that's happened was the healing of the water. So, you've just started your ministry, and now these people come and oppose him strongly. I don't like the ESV translation that actually is inaccurate when it says some small boys, because that is not at all what was going on here. Really, it should be young men. Verse 23, some young men came from the city and mocked him. So we'll get into some details in a minute. This is true. Anytime you step into a ministry situation, you just have to factor this in. There is going to be opposition. Number one is that you're going to have people They're not going to flow with everything you say. Number one, simply because some people haven't made up their mind about you. They don't know whether they're going to receive you or not. They're thinking about it. So, this is especially true. If any of you ever take over a church, please learn this lesson. Is you're going to have people, they're not going to respond enthusiastically and do backflips and be saying, thank God you're here. Okay? They just haven't made up their mind. That doesn't mean they're against you. Doesn't mean they hate you. They just don't know yet. So, you just factor that in. Number two is there are people who don't prefer you. You're not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and that's okay. There are people that they would not necessarily groove on my sense of humor or, you know, personality or whatever. That's okay. That doesn't mean that they have the mark of the beast, because there are people that, you know, they prefer one pastor over another, and that's in many ways totally acceptable. That's just the way that life is. You have to recognize that. And then you're going to deal with people. You are going to deal with people that in themselves, they have insecurities. One of the things about insecurity is defensive. When a person is uncertain, they don't have confidence in themselves, often how they come across is mean. They act like, I don't even like you. They'll look at you, and if you're looking at their face, you'd think that they're looking at you like, you know, what kind of worm are you? That's not. It's just they have, because of their own insecurities, they treat everyone at arm's length. That's how they come across. And if you understand that, that will really help you. So the reaction you get from people, it may not be that they hate your guts. It might be that they are simply insecure. And those are things that will help you. In those first three instances, none of those three have to be dealt with. Okay, so in leadership, you have to learn some things have to be dealt with, which we're going to talk about in a minute. All of the things I just said now, they don't have to be dealt with at all. I do not have to, for someone who is making up their mind, I don't have to go, hey, listen, no, you're going to make up your mind today. Do you love me as your pastor? Am I? I don't have to do that. There are people, if they're insecure, I don't have to demand, listen, pal, you're going to get over it, and you better never give me a mean look again. It's immaterial. I don't have to worry about that. So, very good lesson that I try to teach in a lot of different ways. This story is strange because some people die in it. So let me give you a first lesson of working with people. In ministry, not everyone needs to die. If you'll just keep that, write that down somewhere, not everyone has to die. So there are some people, that is their only answer in every situation. Is if you look at me funny, you need to die. If you do anything, you need to die. Well, so you so in the first instance, some people will warm to you over time. The people who haven't made up their mind, some of these people over time, they will make up their mind. I wasn't sure about this guy. You know, they're listening to your preaching, they're seeing the decisions you make, and they come to a point. It's like, I do like this guy. And I didn't have to do anything about it. It was simply resolved automatically. Some people, if you are not someone's favorite cup of tea, then as long as they're not doing anything outwardly destructive, it doesn't matter. They're not hurting anything, right? I'm going to preach today. I'm going to minister, and there probably will be some people that they think, you know, they don't really care whether I'm the pastor or not. If I was not here, okay. If I am here, whatever. That's fine. They're not hurting anything. So I don't have to have an inquisition or string them up by the thumbs or whatever. Thirdly is you will have some people that you will help them in crisis. And this is a thing about wisdom. I've had people that probably because of their own insecurity, maybe because of their own funkiness in different ways, they have actually treated me quite rudely, but I know things in life. I know in life, sometimes people lose their jobs. Sometimes people get sick. Sometimes marriages are in crisis. Sometimes they're under assault unfairly. And they're going to need help. And I've had people that they have treated me like they hate my guts. And probably it's their insecurity. But then there's a crisis. I'm there when they're in the hospital or something is there. And now all of a sudden, a need has opened their heart. And that's what you will discover. So, from then on, I am like the greatest thing since sliced bread. Why? Because I ministered to them in a time of need. Because I understood they didn't need to die. And then I ministered and that relationship changed. And so that's crisis will do that. Finally, there are some people, they will resolve their own issues. People change over time, right? Sometimes people just, they get over things. They're going through, they're not responding well because they've got, you know, marriage issues or whatever. And they get over it. And they move on and their personality and everything changes. Okay, so that is all under the heading of not everybody needs to die. But this story is not about that. Okay, this story is talking about people who are in opposition deliberately. And they're actually doing damage. So, it is possible that people can have things at work in them that cause harm to other people. Of course, immorality would be top of the list, right? Is we deal with immorality. I don't just stop people as they walk in the door going, have you got any CDs at home with lyrics that are unacceptable? Right? There's a whole range of things. You know, you just work things out with God. But, hey, pastor, you know, I was driving down the street and got off work late at night and I saw this couple there in the backseat of the car. All right, well, I got to deal with that. I'm not going to let that go because the Bible speaks and is clear about immorality and leaven leavens the whole lump. So that is something that I'm not free to simply let them work out over time. They are going to hurt the congregation. Immorality would be one. False doctrine. We have from time to time, whether they came from another church, whether they just simply started reading books and looking at nonsense on websites. And so now they are filled with false doctrine. Did you know that once you're saved, you're always saved? Did you know that Jesus Christ is not God? Or, you know, some strange doctrine. I can't let that go. That needs to be dealt with. And then, of course, then you have, this would be an extreme, but witchcraft. If you had somebody who's coming to church and they're genuinely involved in witchcraft as far as black magic, that would be something. And in rare occasions, and you have to take this with a grain of salt. And a lot of this, by the way, this lesson in many ways is under the file it away for later on. It won't mean a lot to you now, but file it away. It'll help you. Is that you do have people that witchcraft is actually a work of the flesh. So really, witchcraft is manipulation. It is bending someone else's will to your will. So that's the whole point. If you understand, why do people use magic, black magic? When I was in South Africa, the first guy I ever met that was involved in witchcraft, he was explaining to me, is that he was using black magic to try to make a woman who did not want anything to do with him, to make her love him. That's the point. It's not twinkling of a nose and cute little, it's making people do what they don't want to do. Okay, you can have people in the congregation who they have never sacrificed a single cat, but they are extremely manipulative. And they are causing many problems because they're bending. Okay, now to the details. This strange story, what the heck is this? Elisha's having a bad day simply because they make fun of his bald head. He kills, his translation says, the young boys. That is not at all what's happening. So, Bethel was the hub of false religion. Okay? It was an outpost of false religion that involved witchcraft and sexual perversion. So in this, I took issue with the ESV translation. It is not young boys. It was young men. In the original language, this is men up into their 30s. They could still be called, as the New King James says, young men. So, the issue here is open defiance. That's what's going on here. It's not little boys who, hey, pastor, you're losing your hair. In the name of Jesus, die. That's not what's going on here. What's happening is people who have witchcraft, false religion, they are openly defying. That is what this story is all about. And they were saying this publicly. This wasn't just somebody who, you know, I liked Elijah, I'm not sure about Elijah. That's not what's going on here. In front of everyone, publicly, what they are doing is they're trying to prevent other people from responding to Elisha's ministry. So, that gives you a more correct understanding as to why the extreme judgment here is because this is open defiance. And that's a far different issue. Having balanced it with not everybody needs to die, some people do need to die. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about confronting them. Now, I said that opposition is a part of ministry. This is why we have to talk about this as far as leadership, because some men, they struggle in dealing with opposition. This is a great struggle for them. What do you do when there is open defiance, when there is false doctrine, immorality, things that are hurting the whole church, people who are trying to do damage in the church? So, now you have the man, in this case it's Elisha. So, let's put it in terms of the most likely application for us would be, is if you ever are pastoring. Okay, so now you're a pastor, and you're faced with open defiance or people causing damage. Now, here's the problem. There are men, you may be ministering to people that have their own rejection, they have their own issues. The problem is men who go into the ministry and they are dealing with their own issues with insecurity, rejection, lack of confidence. So, it makes ministry very difficult. It's very difficult to be a leader when you have not resolved issues of insecurity because of several reasons. Number one, there are men that they can't stand to not have anyone not like them. I don't know if I said that right. They can't stand when people don't like them. All right. By nature of the ministry, I want to be bluntly upfront with you. If you are going to be a pastor at any given time, you're going to have numbers of people not happy with you. That's just the way it is. That cannot be avoided. So whether that is somebody who, whether they are religious, you know, Pastor, I have a word for the entire congregation. Absolutely not. I don't ever, do not. I don't want you giving people words in our church. I heard from the Lord. So they're not happy. Whether that is someone having to be personally disciplined, whether that's the parents of kids that you discipline in lots of different ways. At any given time, part of my job is I do make people unhappy. I don't like that. I don't aim for that. I don't take that as a badge of honor. It's just the way that life is. By nature of protecting one person or group of people, it is possible that I will upset somebody else. So, if you hate that idea, there are people who come to church and I know that they're ticked at me. They let me know. They mad dog me through the church. Or I have people that they walk in the door and they snub me, don't shake my hand. They let me know they're not happy. What? Okay, that's life. So if that is going to destroy you, I would suggest you find another line of work. Because that's just the way life is. You can't help that. Okay. Secondly, there are people that they hate the emotional trauma of confrontation. Part of being a leader is you have to sort stuff out. How do you sort stuff out? The only way to sort stuff out is you've got to talk to people. And that often is not comfortable. Because when you're talking to them, they're already, they come in mad. Or, you know, in the, reacting in unhealthy ways. So it's not like these are pleasant conversations. So some people in their background, they're guys that, you know, if we were to play Dr. Phil, is that they were raised in a family and, they, you know, there was emotional trauma and divorce and yelling and screaming. And so they now in life, I hate trauma. I hate having to, you know, talk about anything bad. So they are, you know, when I get to people and they're going to get married in pre-marriage counseling, I often have a simple question is, what is your usual method of resolving conflict? How do you react when you get in conflict? Are you a stuffer or an exploder? Because there are some people is that in life, they've had trauma, so in their approach and everything is stuff it. Inside, they're burning and seething, but they don't want to talk about it. We don't talk about that. It's difficult to be a healthy pastor or a healthy leader if you can't talk about things. That's very, very difficult to do. And then, thirdly, is you have men, some have the misguided idea that that things will take care of themselves. If I ignore it, this is the ostrich mentality. If I bury my head in the sand, if I pretend it's not happening, eventually it'll take care of itself. It'll go away. It will not go away. Problems do not magically resolve themselves. They often have to be resolved. So sometimes there are, you know, I'm giving balance here. Sometimes that you need to pray and leave it with God. But sometimes things have to be discussed. They have to be worked out. So in any of these three issues, is some men's answer is to ignore opposition. You got people who are openly defying, spreading false doctrine, fornicating like rabbits, and their answer is nothing. Just it's going to go away. So you have things that are never fixed. I had a pastor call me one time, and he's talking about witchcraft and problems in the church, and we're struggling to lock people in. Well, then it comes out in conversation for years, for not a month, a week, for years. He had a lady in the church that whenever he preached something she didn't like, she would go around to people and would, "I disagree with that. He shouldn't be preaching that." And she's been doing this for years. So he's asking me about witchcraft. And my question is, why is this lady in the church? What have you done about her? He hasn't done anything. I don't get that. So you're going to let, we can't lock people in. You have somebody who's going around and publicly defying you? That doesn't make sense. So that didn't get better. Right? As Tom Paine has a saying, is most people don't wake up smart. Right? This lady didn't wake up and go, "I'm not going to be a jerk anymore." That doesn't happen. That's not how problems get fixed. So then you have damage that can be done. If you don't have the ability to confront, damage is done sometimes that can overwhelm God's purposes. So David, by not dealing with Absalom, he allows Absalom to commit murder and does nothing. And by not doing that, eventually it overwhelmed the kingdom and destroyed the kingdom. So, you know, various things. I had a pastor one time that he was allowing a religious guy to dominate his church, to draw people to himself in arranged meetings apart from church and do all that. That was one thing, and that man eventually took the majority of his congregation away. He would never say anything to the man. He let it go on. In another instance is a man who would let a dominant man, it would be, you know, song serving. And this is mentioned as in a small church, and or a smaller church, is that just before song service, this guy, he wouldn't like something, and so he would start yelling and would stomp out of the church. Sometimes he would grab his instrument and walk out of the church and refuse to play that night. So it's like, so he's describing this to me. It's like, I don't, you know, to me that's mystified. Why would you let that? Go talk to this guy. Maybe I'll talk to him. Don't talk to him. Go to his house. Go right now. Why? You got to go tell this guy. This is not going to work. You can't do this anymore. And he would not. And eventually lost his whole church. So, and then his statement to me was, I just don't like confrontation. That's not going to work. So, I don't like confrontation is not compatible with leadership. So, please, and I will balance, which is why I began with balance. I understand there are insecure guys who then they're going to confront every time someone, you know, picks their nose, they're going to have a major meeting and a fight about it. I get that. But I'm giving you balance for the future. File it away. You have to be able to confront. That's the way it is. So, a necessary part of leadership is confrontation. So, that begins first and foremost with a spiritual confrontation. Verse 23 says that he cursed them. That doesn't mean that he cussed them out. This was in spiritual terms. He prayed. In other words, spiritually he said, I am not going to allow that spirit anymore. I forbid this. So my first strategy always, if I have somebody in church that may need to be dealt with, before I have ever spoken to them, I've been praying about them. There are people that they're really in opposition, and I'm wanting to resolve this. You know, sometimes the concert directors will come, and I'll be at church praying. Sometimes I'm at church praying. I'm praying over individual seats. I'm praying over people. God, this person is in opposition, and I'm not going to let that spirit. Now, we can resolve that in different ways. Sometimes that's simply praying and God heals their heart. That's fine. But in some way, I am going to neutralize. Remember, the Bible has radical stories. Ananias and Sapphira, they were killed in church, and here is the bears eat them up. The point is not that our job in life is to, you know, hey, I've been reading in the paper, we have a bear in Prescott. Maybe we could invite him over. Can you come to church Sunday night? You know, the point is God uses radical stories to make a point. And that is, your job is to neutralize opposition. Okay, so that is spiritual in nature, spiritual confrontation. Sometimes that involves words personally spoken. This is one of the crucial skills in life. You have to be able to talk things through. That would start with your marriage. Okay, that's why God has you get married, because that's where you start learning to sort problems out. Because if you're married, you're going to have problems. That's where you... And then from there, guys who can't sort stuff out in their marriage make bad pastors. Because for the same reasons they can't sort it out in their marriage is why they can't sort it out in the church. You have to have the ability to try to resolve. I've taught you whole lessons on this. This is a skill. Confrontation is a skill. And I've taught you many times, you can make the original issue, you can make it bigger simply by the way that you approach people, right? And I've given you the extreme example of saying, if I start a conversation with, what kind of moron would I predict that conversation is not going to go well. So, I've taught, you know, that's a whole lesson in itself, is you, there's a way that you can approach people. I give people room to back down. I know that you probably didn't mean to do this. Why do I say it like that? Even if I think they did mean to do it. I'm allowing their pride, they can back down gracefully. And then the understanding, I've pastored very few evil people. There are people that they're doing damage, not because they're the Antichrist, because they don't realize. They don't have social skills. You know, when you said to that lady, hey, you're a big fat cow, that's not going to work in life. That's the, you know, now her husband wants to beat you up in the parking lot. You probably shouldn't call ladies fat cows. Matter of fact, you shouldn't say anything about a woman's weight. Never, ever, 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 ever. That would be a good rule. So, there are people that they're doing damage and they don't realize it. Hey, listen, don't, I don't want you. So you have to have the ability to try to resolve. So partly is your job, and again, there's so much involved here. Finding out the facts. Don't jump to conclusions. Hey, is it true that you said to this lady you're a big fat cow? No, Pastor, it wasn't. It was, and you may have heard it wrong, because you get people that you hear things secondhand, and by the time it gets to you, it's Chinese whispers, and now it's totally different. Than no, it wasn't big fat cow. It was, you know, something, I don't know what it could possibly be. You know, whatever. So get the facts, get it straight. Oh, okay. So there are times where I've. Is it true that you went to a cross-dressing gay bar? No, absolutely not, Pastor. I was, you know. Okay, well, the facts were totally wrong. No problem. Move along. We don't need to have a confrontation. The facts were completely incorrect. Or, you know. But there are all versions thereof, so to try to resolve. And that's the point. This is true in marriage. This is true in life. This is true in ministry. The point of conflict is not to win. It is to resolve. If you would write that down, if you would put it as your screensaver, get the tattoo, something. The point of conflict is not to win, it is to resolve. That's true in marriage. This is why people have problems in marriage. Because they start a fight, they were like, you know, how come you burnt the toast? But they think anytime you have a conflict, the point is to win. So when someone asks about burnt toast, oh yeah, well, what about the time? They pull out history. Yeah, well, your mother, and you fat cow, you witch, you're right a broom, blah, 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 blah. Because in their mind, the winner is who slashes, hacks, and gouges the worst. I won. That's stupid. Because then you got to deal with all the damage you caused. All it was burnt toast. I would prefer my toast to be a little less cooked. That's resolving. It's not to win. This is not an ego contest. That's true with people. You may have issues. What you need to do is resolve, not win. I'm not trying to. It may be that I'm dealing with something and what they've done is irritating in the extreme. And I'm not pleased that they did this. But the point is, I'm not trying to make them be the scum of the earth. I want to resolve this. I don't want you saying that to people. That was the whole point of the conversation. So, you said this. This is the kind of reaction. That didn't work well. And now you have people, they don't want to be in ministry with you, and everybody wants to leave the church, etc. That's not going to work, is it? And most people, there are few people that they want to be a jerk. I've met very few jerks in life that they woke up in the morning and said, today is a jerk day. I want to be as obnoxious as... I know a few. But most, is there anybody here, you be honest, you have the capability on any given day of being a jerk? Come on, lift your hand. Okay. All right. So, if you have that capability, and you want other people to still work with you, can't you work with other people who may have a jerk day? Right? So, you got to keep that in mind in there. So, trying to resolve, and then sometimes it is simply a part of ministry is you're not necessarily going to be able to, I don't have happy endings in every conversation. Yes, but they begin to weep. Oh my God, what have I done? There are some people, they're just irritated that I'm even speaking to them at all. So, okay, I've tried my best. I've used people skills. I've used wisdom. I've given them room to bet, and they're not getting it. And so my job as the pastor sometimes is simply to say, I am not going to allow that here. Okay, make that clear. I will not let you do that. If you ever do that again, there's going to be trouble. Is that clear? And that's my job. I tried to resolve it. I couldn't. So now I'm just saying, that's the way it's going to be here. That's my job. That's the job of a leader. This story now is in extreme territory, and that is sometimes there has to be judgment. He cursed them. So this cannot continue. A radical story, practical truth. So sometimes there are people they need to be removed from ministry. That is the judgment. That would be the application of this story. Sometimes there is forbidding of contact, of relationship. I've had people that they are unhealthy for new converts. And I have to say to them, you will not speak to new converts, period. Okay? Sometimes I don't want you praying with people at the altar. Sometimes I don't want you talking to new converts at all, period. Or I don't want you talking to women or men or whatever it might be. That is a forbidding contact. Sometimes that involves marking them to other people. If they're at the moment, I may not have, it may not rise to the level of I'm going to throw you out of the church, but the Bible talks about mark them that cause division. You know what? You'd be wise to avoid this person. Well, that's not going to make them happy. What? You know what Pastor said about you? Well, I just marked them, didn't I? That's the point of that you can do that. And then, of course, ultimately, is that fortunately, in rare cases, some people need to be removed from the church. Radical. You don't do this every day. You don't do this. Hey, you looked at me funny. You're out. I trust I've balanced this enough. The point is, most people are not good at this. There's none of you that you probably are good at working with opposition and resolving conflict because it's not natural. There's nobody. When I first had to deal with opposition, I would be nervous and my voice would shake and my mouth would go dry. You get better at it, unfortunately. It is a skill. So I wish I didn't have that skill, but it just has to be done. So you need advice. You got to do this correctly. There's timing. That's why you involve the pastor, because I've had times as a young pastor, I'm going to deal with it a certain way. Pastor just said, don't be stupid. Deal with it a different way. He had a wiser plan. His plan was wiser. I've guided men. Wait. No. Now. Do it this way. Don't do it that way. Guidance. Okay. Proverbs 24, verse 6.
For by counsel you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety.
Okay. In this translation it says, so you need advice when you go to war. If you have lots of good advice, you'll win. So, confronting. Final thought is progress. The issue here in this radical story is progress. When you fail to recognize defiance, or you fail to deal with defiance, you stop progress. That's the point of this story. The people aren't helped if you can't deal with opposition. You'll have people in the church, they are hurt by opposers or people in opposition. Number two, the church is stunted. The devil, of course, will send people to churches just simply to try to block God's will. Balak sends Balaam to try to block God's people from entering the promised land. That is a very good picture of the strategy of hell. He allows people or sends people to our churches and stirs things up in them so that they will block God's will. The church doesn't make progress. Thirdly, your ministry can be stunted. If you can't confront, if you don't know how to resolve conflict, you're not going to be a good pastor. That's all there is to it. So, your ministry is stunted. Part of growth comes from learning how to handle confrontation. And that's, you're only going to grow. So, but when we do deal with opposition correctly, the result is progress. Let's look at verse 25. So he just pronounced judgment. The bears have just eaten them up. And what happens when you send bears? Verse 25.
Then he went from there to Mount Carmel and from there to return to Samaria.
Okay. Then he went from there. Partly this is describing his ministry that was in a circuit, but if he didn't deal with them here, he's going to be stuck. That's the point. When you deal with confrontation wisely, in your marriage, when you learn how to sit down without your ego getting in the way and work things out, when you try to listen to the message beyond your own offenses, your marriage makes progress. You make progress in the church ministry, et cetera, et cetera. People are helped. They make progress. The church makes progress. You make progress personally. One of the things is that if you don't deal with confrontation, one of the things is that, and again, file this away. It won't mean much to you if you've never pastored. There are pastors that every time they pray all day long, they have one person in the church who just dominates their mind. That's all they think about. That's all when they're praying. And the reason why is that person should be dealt with. And so one of the things that happen when you deal with that, you break something off your mind. You make progress. You have to go on. Okay, so I just gave you a... some of you don't appreciate that. I just gave you a wealth of information right there that will help you in life. Okay, that should open some questions then. Some things you want to know. Eli.
In all the situations you were describing, there were things that are more clear. But when somebody gives you like a bad vibe, you just get the heebie-jeebies about this person, but there's no crossing of lines, nothing valid that you can confront. You just know that something is not right and seriously so.
And you start with prayer. Because the Bible says that Jesus is the Lord of His church. It's His church. So God obviously wants things to come to light, right? So there's, and that's true. That often is moral or doctrinal or rebellion issues. I'm not sure what. So I pray. God, there's this person, right? I pray for everybody. Every one of you, I lift you up by name. If you're going funky, then, and I don't know what flavor of funky, then I'm lifting up saying, God, I don't know what's wrong. Help this person. Because that's what I really want. You have to understand what we would prefer overall is to help people. Okay? So, that's what I want. And there are people that I've prayed for. They've been in opposition. God healed their heart, moved on. I never had to confront them. I never had to slap them. We just were able to work on it. So, In that sense, I feel something, something's wrong, I don't know what, pray. And it always comes out. And whatever is driving, because Jesus loves His church. Go ahead.
You kind of answered it with his question, but I was going to ask you, with the passive-aggressive people that can manipulate, a lot of times there's not something you put your finger on and say, you know, like, okay, you need to, like, cut it out. You know, so, but you kind of answered it, basically pray to expose them or...
Yes, in most cases, but ultimately behavior, even passive-aggressive behavior at some point will rise to the level where they have to be spoken to at some point as well, right? So, a no-brainer is the guy who says, I'm going to kill you all, and is screaming in the middle of the church. Okay, that guy needs to be dealt with. We know that. But the person who is quietly making everyone feel uncomfortable to where everyone in their band drama, you know, whatever, they all want to leave the ministry, that's not going to work, is it? And so at some point you have to, it's a much harder conversation because it's not as clear, but at some point, Right? You know, in that case, sometimes I have conversations with people to where the gist of it is, at what point do you realize the problem is you? So, that's a conversation I had. Someone was complaining about, I've been in this ministry, that ministry, this ministry, that ministry, and they're bad, so I quit. And this one, then they're bad, and I quit. And they're bad, and I quit. And blah, blah, blah. And so, I had a conversation that went like this. At what point do you realize it's you? So either you're very unlucky that you keep just getting in with jerks, or you're the jerk. Nate.
So, Pastor, I always been a little confused about this. I guess working in the house, there were some times when we had to remove some guys and. And then you feel things change for the better. And so part of me was like, I'm glad that they were gone. It was like, yes. But then you also was like, man, I believe God could have changed them, you know?
Yeah. But you can only work with people where they're at. So we remove, and later on they may wake up smart. That's called repentance. And the prodigal said, and he came to himself. So that's... The whole point of discipline. I had a conversation yesterday with a pastor talking about moral discipline, and I said, "But do you understand? Disciplining people is not spanking, right? The point of discipline is not you have done something bad, so I am spanking you to punish, right? 90 days in the hole, 6 months in the hole. The point is not." Is number one, what does the Bible say is the point of discipline? Discipline works repentance, to turn them over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that their spirit may be saved. It's to help them. That's first of all. So, in the radical of this person needs to not come to church anymore, you have two issues at mind. Number one, you need to change your mind and change your heart, or it's not going to work. It's to help them. It's not, you have offended me, and you have ticked me off. So that's why in the conversation I was having with a guy, we do have lengths of time. We start with things you're out for, 90 days, 6 months, whatever. But I have a little speech that I give to people. And that speech, it has two parts. First part of the speech is, I don't have a repentometer. I can't tell what's in your heart. The only way I can tell what's in your heart is by your actions. Okay? So, if your actions change, that will tell me in some way that your heart has changed. So, and that often is explained in moral terms, is if you fornicated with someone and you keep contact with them, your heart hasn't changed. There's a problem. Because I know, Pastor, there's no app for that. The second part of the speech is that it used to be hard and fast. You're out for 90 days, 60 days, 6 months, whatever. But if I say, you know what? I'm not a prison warden. If I put you out for 100 years, if your heart doesn't change, it doesn't matter. If your heart doesn't change, you should never come back. And that's the difficult part. You should only be in ministry if you love people. I don't in any way enjoy, I don't get any satisfaction. I don't brag about, yeah, and I told that guy. I don't get off on it. I don't do that simply because someone irritates me. It is a necessary part that I take very seriously because I'm going to answer to God in greater judgment than other people. I take it very seriously. So, because I love people, so first of all, I'm trying to help you and I pray that God gets a hold of your heart. But if not, I can't let you hurt other people. And that's the part. If you don't ever change your heart, you're not coming back. That's the point. And that breaks my heart. There are many things I do as a pastor that break my heart. I grieve over people that won't do right. But what's the alternative? Come in our church and damage the whole thing. That doesn't make sense. So. Yep.
When that's the case and you put people out, just
just out of curiosity, do you tell them, call me in 6 months, or do you follow up with them later, or how does that even work?
Well, what I do is I, depending on the person, their spirit, the gravity of the crime, you know, all kinds of things, ultimately, while I don't have it as a prison term, in X number of days, you can come back, scratch off the days. What I do is, you can call me in 90 days, 60 days, 6 months, whatever the term is, and we'll discuss what you're doing. And I kind of give them, if like, moral issue, put them out for fornication. If the night before, if at day 89, you know, if I put a girl out, and day 89, you know, she screwed every member of the Hell's Angels, and then my 90 days are up, Pastor. That's not going to work, is it? So what we're looking for is repentance. So I tell them very clearly, you're not just going to show up at church. You're going to call me, and I'll either talk to you on the phone, or I'll set up a time and speak to you. And what we're going to talk about is, how have you been living? And the biggest question that I ask people is, what has changed in your heart? How are you going to approach things differently? Because I have these conversations, I've talked to people, and when I have this conversation, they're fighting with me immediately. It's like, nothing has changed. That's not going to work. It doesn't matter how long, right? But then they're, you know, so that's what I want to know is what's, how are you going to live differently? Do you see things differently than you did before? Because that's what repentance is, change your mind. Then you change your actions. Okay?
When you're talking about confronting people, I thought of the story where the lady Paul and Paul saying, you know, these are the men of the Most High God. And I know she was demonically inspired, but have you ever run into that where someone's almost like too much in your corner, and so you have, they're doing damage that way?
Yeah, you know, probably the most common application of that would be taking over. I've taken over a church. Let me see, one, two. I've taken over churches 3 times, and then in addition to various times when I've been on staff here, but 3 times outside of Prescott. One of the simple lessons, and I got burned in one church because I didn't understand this. And that is the people who are the most eager to say, thank God you're here. Thank God we finally have a real pastor. Those are the first people who will put the knife in your back. And I didn't understand that. It's just like, you know, these people really love me. And I was just stupid, that was all. So that would be the application there. So yeah, you got people who, their words can...
So did you have to confront those people like the next time when you were wiser, did you confront them?
No, in that sense I just smiled. But I didn't take a lot of stock in it, you know. I didn't put a lot of stock in it, so.
Have you ever avoided conflict like in ministry, maybe when you're a younger pastor, because somebody was either a big tither, somebody had influence, did you ever try to, like, did you ever avoid conflict and just go,
I can't say that I ever did, because I don't know. Money is one of the issues. I did have a revelation. Having your money and killing the church is not going to work. So it doesn't matter, you know. Partly one of the things that helped me was when I first pioneered, I had a guy who he had been used to. He's religious. I had all converts, one religious guy. And he was used to his money. Off the top of my head, I went out in 1986. He was putting in, how much was he putting in a week? He was putting in either $140, $180 a week. That was serious money in those days. But it was fortunate. I was actually on support. So his money really didn't actually matter one way or another. So he was used to, and then sure enough he rose because he thought his money bought me. So I learned a lesson in that, is that money, it's not worth it. So I can't say that I ever, I do have 30 years of memory banks here to search, but I can't say that I ever did. I mean, there are people that I, you know, in needing to deal with them or confront them, I probably was thinking, great, you know, this is not going to be good financially, but I did it anyway. So, yeah. Kim?
If a group or a family is doing something unhealthy, would you need to speak to them all together, or you
line them up and you run down the line? Just, it's a group slapping, or you get them in a circle and you just spin around. Yeah, you know, there's no one way. The reason why, number one, you need to pray like crazy. My number one prayer is wisdom. Because there are so many different ways that things could go. Number two, get advice in that. And then, because not every confrontation is the same. And so, I can't give you that. There are family issues, yes. You have family that the whole family is rising or causing you a problem or whatever. So, it just all depends. I've had families that are doing that. I pray. And they've been resolved, and they're the finest people. That's fine. So I don't have, you know. The whole issue overall is that you have to have a heart of redemption. I don't care if I have to go hammer and tongs with you, if I have to look in your face, and if I have to discipline, do that. But if there's repentance and change of heart, my job is to redeem. So it does. I have people that they have been very offensive to me personally, but then they repented. My job is to let that, you know, I don't have to bring up and string them by the thumbs because you said and you offended me and you were. My job is redemption. Let it go. We'll. That's the default. Sometimes it's not possible, but that's what you aim for. So in a family, I've had families that they're resolved and you do that.
You try to preach a sermon. You're going to confront somebody on, say, an issue of either morals or rebellion or something. Do you try to preach something that sets the tone, or?
No, I'm not. Pastor and I are not. I'm not big on preaching on current issues.
Okay.
So. Probably 90% of my sermons come from Bible reading. Whatever I'm reading in the Bible, something inspires me, and I preach that. So I can therefore, in good conscience, I may preach something that is relevant because that was in my Bible reading. I can do that in good conscience. I will never make a sermon for someone. Number one, it doesn't make sense because every time I've done that in the past, they don't show up. So it doesn't make sense. But it's just bad. I am not a reactive preacher. There's gossip in the church. I'm preaching on gossip. There's a rebellion in the church. I'm preaching on rebellion. So I don't. There's very little that, and definitely not, no, not in advance. I'm going to confront this guy, so I'm going to preach on that. No. The exceptions may be if I am dealing with their unfortunate immorality sometimes comes in waves. You have a spirit that tries to lay hold of the church. So in that sense, I may begin to preach and bore in. But no, I do not preach something before I confront. No, I don't do that. Because then, of course, natural human nature, by the time I confront them, they're going to get, hey, you were preaching that to me, weren't you? So it's going to make my job harder in confronting them if I'm trying to resolve it. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to throw them out, well, then it doesn't matter what they think. But, yeah.
So is it important to pray especially for discernment? Because you can have someone that, you know, you're allowing back into the church and they say all the right things, but they haven't changed.
Sure, yeah. So, but time will tell. I mean,
has that happened?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Because people are not uniform. They're not cookie cutter. So, yep. I mean, I've seen, you know, I've seen lots and lots of stuff, And so if they made the right noises, came back, and then they are immoral again, causing problems again, then I got to deal with them again, you know. So I probably will be a look, you know. They just made their life harder. Now they want to repent. They want to get born again.
So say you've had to deal with somebody, you know, not putting them out. Okay, so it's like awkward, like afterwards, you know. How do you act around them? You know, because I've been in ministry with, you know, younger people, had to confront issues, and they're, from then on, they're just kind of like, you know.
Well, you know, first of all, first and foremost, it has to come from you. You know, the vast majority of you have been saved, you know, either in our church or in our fellowship. So I was interested when Josh Neal was on staff. Josh did not come from our church. He was saved in Santa Fe, and that was his background, et cetera. Long story. So I just was curious one day as I asked Josh the question, what have you learned since you've been here? As far as are there things that are different? And he said something interesting. He said straight away, and this may be in Josh's issues or personality, he said, Pastor, the first time that you ever kicked my butt, you kicked my butt, he said, and a few minutes later you talked to me normally. So that he said that was out of his mouth, that was shocking to him. In other words, I didn't hold it against him. I had an issue to be resolved. Who knows what the issue was? There's something that needs to be, you know, fixed and done in the paper. I don't know, whatever the issue is. Don't do that. This is why. He also said, you explained to me why. It wasn't just, I wasn't just flipping. It is, look, the reason why that's a bad idea is, this is what it does in the immediate term. This is what it does for the future. And bang, 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 don't ever do that again. And then he said a few minutes later, I spoke to him normally. That's done. I'm done with that. It's not a personal. That's why you got to pray that God will help you resolve things in your own insecurity and ego issues. It's not an ego issue. It's not you've made me look bad or you've disappointed me or anything like that. You shouldn't do that. This is why. Once we've said that, if you agree, now if you're fighting and you want to yell at me and say it's not true, then we got bigger problems. But you want to, yeah, okay, all right, I'm sorry, we're going to fix that. Let's move on. So a lot of that comes from you. Then, of course, you have people that they are awkward because of their own insecurity. That's just the way life is. So I got to work that through. I keep on treating them normally, et cetera, et cetera. Unless, you know, of course, then if it's a disciple, in a discipleship setting, I may then have to speak to a disciple. It's like, bro, I spoke to you 6 months ago. You haven't talked to me since. That's not going to work, is it? In discipleship terms. So that may be. So overall, I wish I've said to some pastors in the last few months, I wish this was something that I could give you conflict resolution training. I wish I could say, okay, we're going to role play here. You're the jerk, and you're the one who's going to resolve it. Go ahead. And some of you don't have to act very hard, do you? So, I can't. There's no real way to do that. The crucial thing is, now you must work on these things. Every one of you you work with people. Most of you are married. Is that right? Almost all of you are married. So there's a wealth of conflicts. God has blessed you with an array. And you are in ministry. Manhood resolves issues. That's what a man does. A man doesn't pout. A man doesn't go on and on and on and on and on and have a fit. My father would beat my butt, would let me cry for a little bit, and then would say, okay, that's enough. Because that was a lesson in life. We don't pout for hours. You're not going to sulk. You're not going to. And then he would give me a hug. Tell me that he loved me. Those are life lessons, aren't they? There's behavior that's unacceptable. You can't pout forever. And we still love you even though you've done something bad. Those are skills you need to have right now. So that is the point. Is that some of you have issues. You're while it doesn't mean that every little issue in life, there is room in life for let it go. There are things people say something stupid to me. Let it go, man. I don't need to take them to task. That's a skill. That's you need to be larger. But there are things that this is genuinely causing a problem. So you have to learn how to. In my marriage. For the longest time, I caused myself big problems because if my wife said anything to me, I was not listening to the message. When she's saying something, I'm automatically building a defense, and my ego, I got filled with pride and filled with anger instead of listening to what she was saying. And I finally got to where this is not working. So, one of the things that began to change was to have a conversation and I'm not going to worry about if you said it the right way. Right? Every couple plays this. Always? Always? I always do that? Well, you know if someone says always, it doesn't literally mean every single time. Okay. So, someone may say something and they may say it foolishly, but what's the message? Right, what's the message? And when I said I am going to live, it's like, okay, yeah, I do that. Yeah, that's not right. Instead of reacting, things changed in my marriage. But that's true in everything in life. That's a skill. So you have to learn how to. And especially God has given you things, a lot of things are not life-changing. It's small issues. You could speak to people on small issues now, and it's not the end of the world. It's not revival. It's not the church is going to die. It's like, bro, you know what? In the band, when you do that, that's not working. How can we resolve that? You know, and there's a lot of different ways you can, you know, it's a skill. Am I doing something that's provoking this? Help me to understand that. You know, this is not working. How can we resolve this issue? And there's a lot of different ways. I love you. I want this to be fixed, but we can't go on like this. How do we fix this? Talk things through. If you give people room, if you don't make it about your ego, you can resolve lots and lots of issues in life. And that's a skill that you're going to need over and over and over again in life. You have your hand up?
I was just going to... all I was going to say is I really respected your answer to the question regarding how you discipline a good tither. Because that question actually... If you would have answered it the other way, it would have allowed compromise to being a godly leader.
No, we don't.
So I was like, that's man, I was really.
You were hoping. Pastor Mitchell's ministry was hanging by a thread.
It was. the wisdom of God, yeah, I just appreciate that. That was good.
Good. Thank you. Okay. All right. So next week we'll do role playing, and we're gonna have a list. We're gonna decide who wants to be the jerk. very good. Okay, covered some ground there.